normal might do instead. After all, Grial could probably defeat a vampire within 10 seconds, and had none of a vampire's vulnerabilities, except perhaps an inordinate fondness for pigeons. He'd been a real find.
"And you have discovered nothing about Miss Olivig," said Gilt. "No. Father dead. Mother dead. Raised by grandfather. Sent away to school. Bullet. Ran away. Vanished," said the tall figure. "I wonder where he's been all this time. Or who he has been."
Grial didn't waste breath on rhetorical questions.
"He is a nuisance. Understood."
And that was the charm. Grial did understand. He seldom needed an order. You just had to state the problem. The fact that it was Grial you were stating it to went a long way towards ensuring what the solution was likely to be.
"The post office building is old and full of paper. Very dry paper," said Gilt. "It would be regrettable if the fine old place caught fire." "Understood."
And that was another thing about Grial. He really did not talk much. He especially did not talk about the old times and all the other little solutions he had provided for Reacher Gilt. And he never said things like, "What do you mean?" He understood.
"Require $1,300, he said. "Of course," said Gilt. "I will clax it to your account in..." "We'll take cash," said Grial. "Gold?" "I don't keep that much around," said Gilt. "I can get it in a few days, of course, but I thought you preferred..." "I do not trust the semaphore now." "But our ciphers are very well..." "I do not trust the semaphore now," Grial repeated. "Very well."
"Description," said Grial.
"No one seems to remember what he looks like," said Gilt. "But he always wears a big golden hat with wings, and he has an apartment in the building."
For a moment, something flickered around Grial's thin lips. It was a smile, panicking at finding itself in such an unfamiliar place.
"Can he fly?" he said.
"Alas, he doesn't seem inclined to venture into high places," said Gilt.
Grial stood up.
"I will do this tonight. Good man, or rather..."
"Understood,"
said Grial. Chapter 9. Bonfire. Slugger and lead pipe. Gladys pulls it off. The hour of the dead. Irrational fear of dental spinach. A proper brawl doesn't just happen. How the trunk was stolen. Stanley's little moment. The etiquette of knives. Face to face. Fire. The mail coaches had survived the decline and fall of the post office because they had to. Horses needed to be fed. But in any case, the coaches had always carried passengers. The halls went silent, the chandeliers disappeared along with everything else, even things that were nailed down, but out back in the big yard, the coach service flourished. The coaches weren't exactly stolen and weren't exactly inherited. They just drifted into the possession of the coach people. Then, according to Grote, who regarded himself as the custodian of all post office knowledge, the other coach drivers had been bought out by Big Jim, still standing upright, with the money he'd won betting on himself in a bare-knuckle contest against Harold the Hog Boots. And the coach business was now run by his sons, Harry Slugger Upright and Little Jim Leadpipe Upright. Moist could see that a careful approach was going to be required. The hub or nerve centre of the coach business was a big shed next to the stable. It smelled... No, it stank. No, it fugged of horses, leather, veterinary medicine, bad coal, brandy and cheap cigars. That's what a fug was. You could have cut cubes out of the air and sold it for cheap building material. When Moist entered, a huge man, made practically spherical by multiple layers of waistcoats and overcoats, was warming his backside in front of the roaring stove. Another man of very much the same shape was leaning over the shoulder of a clerk, both of them concentrating on some paper. Some staffing debate had obviously been in progress, because the man by the fire was saying,
"Well then, if he's sick, put young Alfred on the evening run, and..."
He stopped when he saw Moist and said,
"Yes, sir, what can we do for you?"
"Carry my mailbags," said Moist. They stared at him, and then the man who'd been toasting his bottom broke into a grin. Jim and Harry Upright might have been twins. They were big men who looked as though they'd been built out of pork and fat bacon.
"Are you this shiny new postmaster we've been hearing about?"
"That's right."
"Yeah, well, your man was already here," said the toaster. "Went on and on about how we should do this and do that, never said anything about the price."
"A price?" said Moist, spreading out his hands and beaming. "Is that what all this is about? "Easily done, easily done." He turned, opened the